Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us in another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is author Kern Steinhost. How are you today, Kurt?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing very well, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the podcast. It's a pleasure.
The pleasure's mine. I'm excited to spend the next 30-45 minutes with you.
Great, beautiful. And of course, for our audience, Kurt is the author of Can I Have Your Attention? And we are very excited to have him talk to us today about the books and themes and ideas behind it. He has also spent years studying the impact of tech on human behavior, and he founded FocusWise, a consultancy that equips organizations to overcome the distinct challenges of the constantly connected workplace. But without further ado, let's get into today's podcast, Kurt. And the first question I want to ask you is the one I ask any author that comes on the podcast, and that's actually, what inspired you to start writing and become an author?
Well, as someone diagnosed with ADD, maybe the better question is, what possessed me? Honestly, it was more the reaction to the work that we were already doing. I was speaking and working with companies on these issues, and the book was in some ways a response to the request for people to get more, and even more, it was a chance to lay out the ideas into a format that would both actually be received by people that are distracted, but also help to navigate the interesting and unique moment in history that we are in terms of our relationship with technology.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. And distraction is at the core of the book. I think it's a fair statement to make, but it has also become a monumental topic when it comes to business discussion today. Can you perhaps tell us why distraction is such a important discussion to have, and how are business leaders affected by it?
Yeah, well, I think there's several layers that make this such an interesting topic right now. And the first and simplest one is that when we actually look at the data around the way people are interacting at work, it's a pretty clear case. 70% of email alerts are checked within 6 seconds of receipt, which means you had to be doing something else. Workers check their email every 5 minutes. Depending on the industry, anywhere from 1.5 to as high as 4 and 5 hours a day are lost to what we call cyber loafing. And you know, some interesting studies that even show that employees get interrupted every 3 minutes on average, and it typically takes over 20 minutes to get back to the task. So that's just kind of the simple level. But you know, the truth is, we've always been distracted. People have always wanted to find a new shiny object. That's not new. But what makes today so distinct at work is that we have unlimited access to all of the things that no one was meant to be able to resist. Put simply, we shouldn't have to choose between a spreadsheet and YouTube. Like, YouTube should win that every time. And that makes for a really challenging situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, following on what you said, there was a few years back now, I attended a book launch event, and on there, one of the guests was a very sort of senior member of an HR team. And he said, you know, I'm happy that people are talking about things like distractions. And I remember back in the day, somebody told me, this new thing is called email, and it's going to change your life for the better. And boy, was he wrong. And it's kind of an interesting way that we've come so far in terms of the way technology actually operates, in terms of its efficiency and, you know, its slick looks and everything to show for. But at the same time, you know, that deep-rooted level of distraction is still there. And I want to focus a bit on technology, because although many people pinpoint it as a important factor as to why this is happening, and it's one of the reasons, perhaps, you know, as you were going through the motion of writing the book and all the research with it, what role does technology actually play in distraction?
Great question. And on the one hand, the answer is it has a central role. On the other hand, it is often a scapegoat. And so first, the central role that it plays is it is the driver of this access. And so, you know, when we have access to it, what we've learned is humans don't make really great decisions when we have access to everything that we could possibly want. But, you know, if you go even further down this technology, there's several things about it. Like one device now serves multiple functions. So our brain is, it's wired to have environmental cues that help us dictate behavior. And what happens is we'll go to our phones because we need to check something on LinkedIn, and all of a sudden we're instead figuring out what we want to eat for lunch and then responding to the message that came in on WhatsApp, and all of these things are coming at us because it's one device. And even more, you know, technology companies, I think, are getting a little bit of a bad name, but at the simplest, they want our attention. That's actually what they make money on. And because of that, they're getting better and better and better at actually getting that. And so, you know, it's a tough road for people to navigate when, you know, push was originally in 2003, pushing emails was designed to free us. It was a BlackBerry invention so that people didn't have to sit on their inbox. But now all sorts of devices are using push, and all sorts of apps are using push to grab our attention at all, every moment. Now that's how it is central. Now I want to paint the picture that no one seems to be talking about. Often what we think is just technology is actually culture. Businesses, organizations, leaders have consistently, we see it at every level, adopted ideas and policies that actually exacerbate the issue. So, for instance, most leaders think, and either, unless they are intentional, will measure someone's commitment to an organization and whether they're actually doing their job by how fast they reply to a message. And so in that, they're actually incentivizing email and responsiveness as their number one responsibility. And so you create a culture or an open door policy that to be good at your job means to always be available. Well, all of these ideas made perfect sense in a world where access was the great limiter. But in a world where we have unlimited access with no barriers to connectivity, we have to instead rethink what are we losing as a function of these outdated value systems that teams and leaders and companies continue to live on?
Yeah, and on that, there's a very important point raised there. And we have this interesting picture of what technology is and what it actually does behind the scenes. But what really sticks out for me is the idea of actually fixing it. And I think many business leaders and managers out there have difficulty actually penetrating that question and figuring out, well, what can I actually do? And that's sort of my next question for you, Kurt, is how can business leaders actually win back the attention of their teams? What can they do? And I, for one, for example, know that simply, you know, restricting something is never the answer. It makes people want to have it more. It makes them even more enthusiastic about it. But there has to be a better way of doing it.
One of the interesting things about today is that it is really easy to see problems here, and there's many great books that can talk about the science and the research around what's taking place here and the fragmentation of our attention and how distracted we are, what's happening in our brains. One of the reasons that I wrote the book is because it seemed that there were very few realistic solutions being offered, because there's simply no way to go back 30 years. And we wouldn't want to. Like, I was in Spain for work, and I live in the United States. I got to tuck my kids into bed using FaceTime. I want that technology and the access that it provides. I can leave work early and go home, hang out with family, but still respond to an email rather than having to wait until the fax comes in. It's a good thing. But that just means that leaders have to think differently about it. So a few things that we've seen work really, really well. The first one is what we call a communication compact, because so much of what we think is an individual distraction issue is actually a team communication issue. Our productivity has never been less personal because of how we're all so constantly connected and inundated. And all the communication compact is it's bringing the entire team, the stakeholders, those that we are in frequent communication with, together, not in any structure or hierarchy of authority. So everyone leaves that at the door, and they come in and they answer basically two major categories. First one is, what are realistic expectations of response times? So when do we not need to be available? When do we not need to reply? How? What types of messages should we be immediately available to? Because what often takes place is without explicit communication around this, is it's ironic because we have so much communication, the volume is the problem, but the one thing we don't have is the communication about how we want to actually communicate. And so what happens is whoever sleeps least and replies fastest sets the pace for everyone else. And we were able to partner with an organization that does email analytics. And it's interesting because over and over again, people find that they get the volume of emails, volume of messaging from a very small number of people, and then they get a bunch of random messages from a large number of people. And we tend to get frustrated and blame the large number of people, but it's actually how we handle the small group of people that will dictate whether this issue is going to continue to rise or fall. So expectations are the first category. And then the second category, which is typically we see over and over again, not actually thought about, is the channels that we want to use to communicate. And that means if I haven't selected that this is where we send most of our communication, what happens is someone gets up from their desk and someone else wants something. Well, they send them an email, don't get a reply. They'll use the messaging software, don't get a reply, send a text message, call them at their work, call them at their home, call them on their mobile. They'll drive over to their house, knock on the door, and they're in the bathroom. Right, so you get like 17 messages for one communication. And so we highly recommend a few things. The first is dictating a specific channel that is reserved for emergencies. And that means that frees people from feeling an obligation to always check every channel and be available. Like, we use Slack, but we don't use Slack for emergencies. If there's an emergency, I get a text message on my cell phone. I don't get text messages on my cell phone from my work team for any other reason. It's the only way. And actually, if it's really an emergency, we do the unbelievable. We actually make a phone call. And so by setting that channel aside, it can save us. And then the other big area that we see huge inroads made is working to put the communication within the work itself. So having technology that is in the project management world and word processing, there's great technology that can allow for dialogue about work to occur within the project rather than us leaving and flipping, which is a way that we lose in time and quality, flipping to a different platform. So we're going to talk about it on email, then we're going to work on it on a Word document, and then we're going to talk about it on email, and then we're going to work on it. And that gap can cost us. So if we can shrink it down and put it inside the same document, then we can have a lot of success.
Fascinating insight there, and it actually is leading into my next question very very nicely, and that is the idea of focus wise, which is a very important part of the book itself. And mm-hmm. Perhaps can you give our listeners a beginner's tip on perhaps how they can start implementing focus wise?
Yeah, for sure. I'll step back and just help to create a picture of what we mean when we say focus wise. And we're very intentional because we aren't talking, you know, it would be far easier if we just set clear rules all the time. Like, and I have colleagues in across the industry that do make more specific suggestions. We use the word wisdom because that's what's really required here. And the best way I can describe it is that we are in the midst of an ocean of distraction, and there's no way around that. We can't get out of the ocean. And when you're in an ocean, you don't have the power to eliminate waves and winds and storms. But what's unfortunate today is that for most people, and it's increasingly getting this way as a function of what the automated nature of technology, that we are basically the equivalent of a raft that is tossed about by whatever input comes at us. So our inbox dictates our next activity. We go to YouTube, 70% of YouTube viewing isn't even what people came for. It's what YouTube said they should watch.
Yeah,
absolutely. We go to Amazon and it tells us what we're supposed to buy. In fact, Amazon, I used to say, knows better than my wife knows what I like, but now they know better than what they know more than I know about what I want. You know, and so everything just is dictated for us. And so being focus wise is really, to extend the analogy, it's equipping ourselves to have the ability to be a sailboat within it. And the thing about a sailboat is that you actually can dictate a course, you can get off course when the storms are bad enough, but you actually move a direction. And so the intent here is to say we can take control of this, and our attention is today the single most limited and important resource that we have. It dictates not just how effectively we work, but it dictates the very foundations of the skills that we're developing, the ideas we believe, the person we're becoming is a function of this. And so it's meant to re-encourage people to take this seriously. So that was a long explanation as a foundation for some practical things that can help in that process.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially it resonates personally with me, because I think I have found myself more than once looking at something on YouTube, a piece of information, or perhaps a show, whatever it may be, and ending up on what most users would call the weird side of, you know, Euro, Danceby, cats, and all sorts of other things, which I didn't even think actually existed, which in itself, I think it's actually an amazing feat to achieve in a way.
Totally. And honestly, that's a great reminder to say that what's interesting in this dialogue is often the gap between what we are actually doing and what we think we're supposed to do gets so wide that we feel pretty bad about ourselves. Guilt and shame becomes the way that we think about our relationship with technology. And I do just want to say that why we go back to our technology is in part because of dopamine and the reward system of our brain and addiction. But, you know, there's another part of it, and that's because the technology is amazing and it does offer so many great things. In 2010, the United Nations said that the smartphone was one of the greatest inventions in history for the alleviation of poverty. And so it's a great thing. We just have to put it in the right place in the right context. And what that really practically means is a few things. Number one, we have to make it a little harder to get to at certain periods of our day. So we use a vault, and in fact, we can share it's a chapter of the book that we'd be happy to share with everyone if they want it. And it basically blocks out for a short period of the day for us to pause and prioritize and get our hard work done. I do it at home as well for time with my family. And I make the barrier high enough while not, you know, feeling like I'm a terrible human if I ever check my phone during it, but we make the barrier high enough and we sprint, and then we spend the rest of our day openly accessible. And that actually can make a massive difference. And one more thing, just, you know, there's a slew of ways that we can offer some strategies, but the other one that I would say is, in fact, to use a British analogy, we call it minding the gaps.
Right.
Yeah, and it in some ways, like, if you don't mind the gaps, you'll get run over, right? And today there's no gaps in, you know, from one meeting to the next meeting, from home to work, from work to home. And the problem with that is that 2/3 of workers get to the end of the day, they don't know what they did, much less why they did it. They jump into the workday and they're already overwhelmed by the stimulus. And the only way to chart our course, the only way to make decisions about saying this is what actually is important, this is what is a distraction. The nature of distraction is that it's distracting us from something that is more important. It's not, if it's 9 p.m. at night and I want to watch a comedy, that's not a distraction. That's what I want to do. But if we just take 5 minutes as we're coming into work to visualize and think about what does a successful day look like, and then a few minutes on the back end of the day that says, what did today look like? And do I have anything else I need to do? And like, I get into my garage and my kids used to run out. And other than that being a hazard, we quickly realized that it was also bad because my mind wasn't allowed to close and say that work really didn't need me for the next couple hours. And so then I was half in, half out. So we have to mind the gaps in our experience to make sure we process and open up for the next one.
Great. Some very good advice there for our listeners to reflect back on. And the final question I would like to ask you, Kurt, is the one I ask anyone that comes on the podcast. And that's actually, what are you currently reading?
Ah, great question. Well, I'll answer this in a couple categories. So I always pair, speaking of strategies for the distracted, I give myself a reward and then I do work when it comes to reading. And so it's seldom that I'm not reading some sort of a fantasy novel. because it's my escape. It's my mental decompression. It's what, you know, everyone gets a better Kurt when I can unplug that way. So right now I'm reading a book called The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson, which if you are a Game of Thrones fan, then this is your next one. In fact, it's better than Game of Thrones. And I know that's a scary thing to say. So that's the first one I'm reading. And then the two books that I'm working through in terms of research and my field are, one is called Scattered by Gabor Mate. And it's about, he has a unique perspective on childhood ADHD. And it's just good for me to think about that. And then the other is called Social, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Connect. And that's by a guy named Matthew Lieberman. And it's all about the way that we're designed to communicate and how our brain works with us as social beings.
Great. And of course, for those listening, if those sound very interesting to you, and if you are in fact into Game of Thrones, we'll put links into the description below where you can go and you can check out these books for yourself and perhaps find a new favorite from among them. But with that, Kurt, I would like to thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Pleasure for me as well. Thank you for having me.
And of course, for our audience, if you enjoyed our conversation today, please feel free to check out the description below where you can find all relevant information regarding the book, Can I Have Your Attention? And of course, what Kurt is up to. And there will be links to his social media profile as well if you want to reach out to him and perhaps ask him some follow-up questions on what we talked about today. I would like to thank you very much on joining us today on the podcast. It is always a pleasure to have our listeners tune in, and you can find us as usual on our social media channels at Lit Radio. We very much look forward to seeing you next week.